Richie Neal, I know you've been reading, and that's hard when you're running for Congress. You are the incumbent congressman, of course. You've been reading Robert Caro's, a genius, of course he is, fourth volume on LBJ. What do you come away with?
Well, I've read all of them, and I must tell you that the day that the book was published and put on market, I grabbed it and was enthralled once again by what is now the 3,500 pages that have been written about Lyndon Johnson by Robert Caro. And I must say, I don't think that this history is ever going to be replicated again by an author. I mean, the detail that he goes into in these four volumes, and by the way, he hasn't gotten to Vietnam either yet. So we can await that with, again, great enthusiasm. But one of the things that you take away is the skill of what Caro argues to be the greatest majority leader in the history of the country, Lyndon Johnson. And he carefully explains how Johnson, who had never joined the conservative caucus, the Southern caucus, but had been friendly with all of them, including Richard Russell, including Senator Byrd in Virginia. That's not to be mistaken for Robert Byrd in West Virginia. And how he maintained that friendship for many years through his primary sponsor in the House, Sam Rayburn. One of the things that's striking about the advice, and by the way, Caro gives a great deal of credit to Johnson for that Texas victory, understanding that Eisenhower had won Texas twice. Johnson put it back into the column for Kennedy, Caro argues, and other southern states as well. And what's striking about his accounting of Johnson and civil rights is just how it was sold. And Johnson would argue with the Kennedy administration not to send the spending bills up right away, because if you did that, what was going to happen is that the Southerners would use the spending bills as an effort to slow down the session and then say there wasn't time to do civil rights. So Johnson augured hard to get all the spending bills done and then to get civil rights put in front of the more recalcitrant members of the Congress. And his ability to sell that civil rights bill to Republicans when he knew that there were not enough Southern Democrats who were going to come on board. But, you know, a lot of reputations, like Al Gore Sr., they were made by voting for that civil rights bill. And it is one of the great achievements in history. And when you consider the Johnson years of not only civil rights, but voting rights and Medicare and Medicaid and open housing, it was that skill that he uses the majority leader. And Caro points out that much of this really is ugly to witness, the agreements that are made in the background. But I don't know anybody who would say that we should repeal the Civil Rights Act or the Voting Rights Act. And the way that they were sold to legislators and the way Johnson stared down the opponents is really a classic study in the use of presidential power.
But what was really heroic, it seems to me, about what Johnson was doing was that he knew that the Democrats were out in the South, and he still did it.
Well, there's a moment that one of the chapters concludes with Richard Russell, who was Johnson's great mentor in the Senate, where Russell concludes, after all of those decades of not having a good civil rights bill, although Johnson had passed one as majority leader in 57, that was not considered a big deal, but it had begun the path, Russell concludes, Lyndon Johnson will get a major civil rights bill.
Yeah, but according to those I've talked to, Doris Kearns Goodwin, Dick Goodwin, the rest, he knew that he was going to lose these southern states for the Democrats.
Well, we lost the southern states, and certainly it's uphill now. But remember that Jimmy Carter brought them back in his race in 76, and Bill Clinton brought them back in his race for president in 92. And what's significant about that is that, those two guys that I've just described, give them great credit with a lot of other Southern Democratic governors who really, like Carter, for example, Carter's the one who put George Wallace out of business in that Florida primary. That was the end of the Wallace phenomena. And when you consider that Clinton won Tennessee twice, he won Arkansas twice, he made us competitive, he won Florida once, I believe, and it made our congressional candidates competitive across the South. And I think that there has been in our history a reluctance of Southerners to vote for a Northerner, but there is not a problem with Northerners voting for Southern governors.
Now, Congressman Richie Neal, I want to change the subject. You are my man, of course, to explain things Irish to me, the head of the Irish caucus. A lot of people think that the Irish peace accords would have never happened without you. So I want to ask you about this. The first person I thought of was you when the Queen shook hands with Martin McGuinness of Sinn Féin. What does this mean for the future?
It was a very important moment, and I have been involved in it for more than 30 years. I talked to McGuinness. I talked to the Gerry Adams. I've been in the company many times of Tony Blair. I've talked with John Major, Irish prime ministers and presidents, Bill Clinton, George Bush, and Barack Obama credited me in front of his wife with having had a great presence and influence on the outcome. And what's significant about that, when you have the former commander of the Derry IRA shaking hands with the Queen, and there's the Queen dressed in a regal green, and when she, upon her visit to Dublin, the first time that a monarch could visit Ireland, or the Republic of Ireland, in 100 years, when she said at the Garden of Remembrance, where all of these heroes in Irish history who had fought the monarchy, when she said, on this moment, let's reflect upon many of the things we wished had never happened. And I thought that that was very important. So I was very critical early on, and I think that if McGuinness, who did hard time, and Adams, who did hard time, if they suggest that this is the appropriate moment for the handshake, who are we, living 3,000 miles away, to question it when I have been an ardent supporter of Irish nationalism?
Let me go another place. You know, as the important force that you are on Ways and Means, let me ask you about Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid. Seems to me that the Republicans have been in the House. We talked to Nan Hayworth. We talked to others here all the time. I've been pretty open about their disdain for some of these programs and wanting to privatize them or semi-privatize them. And yet, I don't. When I talk to people, I don't know that they understand what that dramatic difference is, especially older people.
Medicare is good health care. Fewer people administer Medicare than any private health insurance plan in America. Medicare does not have a test of gender, race, religion, and you're never asked if you're a Democrat or a Republican. You turn 65, you join the great club. Social Security has nothing to do with the problem that we have here with these deficits. Nothing. I would challenge anybody to offer a contrary opinion. Medicare has added life to years and years to life. It has transformed the way senior citizens live. Social Security, the average benefit on Social Security, $14,000 a year. Retirement should be a three-legged stool. Some personal savings, a retirement plan, and the guarantee of Social Security. Social Security cannot be outlived. You can outlive an annuity, but you can't outlive Social Security. And the point that I make is it's the greatest anti-poverty program in the history of the world. And I think that when I hear individuals criticize Medicare or Social Security, they never really offer a satisfactory alternative. The Ryan budget eviscerates Medicare. And recall that President Bush tried private savings accounts for Social Security, and I led the charge nationally at the behest of the Democratic leadership to knock those arguments down, and we won because Democrats and Republicans like Social Security. And when you poll the issue of Medicare, seniors are very happy with Medicare.
So isn't it stupid, Richie, we only have a couple of seconds now, for the Republicans to keep on this stuff?
Well, they keep on it at their own peril. And while they would propose privatizing it using vouchers, they forget the fact that life expectancy and the way our seniors live now is so much better than it was before Medicare. The last historic reference, Truman proposed universal health care. Johnson signed the Medicare Act in Harry Truman's living room in Independence, Missouri.
Richie Neal, always a great pleasure. And I have to tell you, I mean it when I say that every conversation that I have with you, I always learn something. And thank you so much for being with us.
Delighted to be with you, Alan. Thank you.